You're listening to Podcast on Fire. It's Asian cinema in a podcast with your hosts, the magnificent trio of Stu, Ken, and Mike.
Hello and welcome to episode 46 of Podcast on Fire. I'm your host, Stuart Sutherland. Joining me tonight, we have Ken.
Hello.
And we have Mike Banner. Okay.
I ain't got time for syllables.
Good for you.
Yeah. Wait, it's a time of economic crisis, obviously, so you have to save up on syllables as well.
Do credit crunch?
Mm-hmm. Right, stop putting us off track already. Man.
Well, I don't want you fucking... off track, you mean?
Yeah, you prick. Right.
Now so... we're on track because you're fighting.
Mm-hmm. It's like spousal abuse or something. I feel like a battered wife.
You fucking will be. Shut up.
Verbally abused by Stu, but I still keep coming back for more. Can't leave him.
Exactly. Just fucking deal with it.
Love.
Right, so this week we're going to be discussing the usual of last movies watched, the new range of movies from Celestial, and a little bit of Wushu. So starting us off tonight, last movies watched, Ken?
Alright, let's talk Silverhawk.
Oh no.
Or don't, depending on the view you are, but okay. I gave Jingle Ma a chance when I watched Playboy Cops. Because it got one good review and it turned out to be a pretty good flick, actually, very brutal. But it doesn't signal that at the beginning of the flick. So, as a side note already, if you're thinking of watching Playboy Cops and after 10 minutes you're thinking this is just glossy, pure bullshit, watch until the end. It turns quite different and quite brutal.
I thought you were going to say, if you're looking for Playboy models, there isn't any.
There is none. and the cover is really misleading and stuff like that. So. But anyway, Silverhawk 04, produced by Michelle Yeoh, her superhero movie, I guess. And really, it has nothing going for it beforehand. It's, Jingle Ma's track record is not good, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And when Michelle Yeoh did The Touch a few years earlier, that was just a complete disaster. And she produced that as well. So, you know, it's you go in with lowest of low expectations, and that helps because it's a completely flawed, ridiculously dumb, but it also flashes some skills in maintaining like the fun and cool of the superhero premise. It aims to be a light-hearted superhero movie with Michelle Yeoh playing the Silverhawk. Obviously she jumps the Great Wall on her bike at during the beginning of the film, and which I didn't mind. I thought that was, you know, it sets the tone, and I'm still on board with the movie. It's not good, but it's not a disaster that will make me turn off the film, which I expected it. And really, the start of the movie, aside from some few fun scenes, and really start of the movie is like two scenes choreographed by Alien Sit, which I think. Is part of the Jackie Chan stunt team or whatever. I think anyway, I recognize the name from somewhere. The two good scenes are when Silverhawk, Michelle's character, encounters Luke Goss's henchman on rollerblades. On bungee cords in one of the scenes, which is quite a cool concept, and then on rollerblades with steel hockey sticks. So, I mean, concept-wise, I was very much on board on when watching that those two particular scenes. Otherwise, you know, the action choreography, when clear, it's all about like one or two kicks in slow motion set to pounding generic techno. And, you know, any move by anyone is accompanied by, you know, whatever whoosh noises they could find out of, you know, sound library. So really, you know... those are the like standard action scenes, and unfortunately, when they make the movie and perform the movie, it's mostly in English, by the way. which I think is not reflected on the Hong Kong DVD. It's mostly dubbed in Cantonese and Mandarin, but it's actually mostly performed in English, and most of the, some of the performers are sync sound, some are just dubbed afterwards, like Richie Wren's character. He says his lines in English, but obviously it's dubbed by basically the token American cop. I'm watching my notes here, but it's basically only that to say about the movie. It has some few, let's say 10 minutes of fun, cool stuff by Jingle Ma, and those 10 minutes include the two action scenes I've been talking about, and basically that's it. But it's more than I expected. It's way more than I expected. You know, you, as a movie overall, you can't just light up for a second or two every now and again and make it a passable time. But seeing as this has had nothing going for it, including shots of superhero costume beforehand, I just cringed when looking at that. But that surprisingly is not does not detract as such, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I wonder though, I think I read a review at the time that said that this would probably be very straining on the eyes to watch on the big screen, because the whole movie is designed to be grey and silver-like in nature. So it's so ultra bright. So I wonder if it's quite a strain to watch this on the big screen. But it's possible, but you know, it's not really recommended either. Did any of you seen that over the years? It's 5 years old already, so.
Yeah, I think I traded with someone and got a hold of the VCD.
Uh-huh. What do you think of it?
I was pretty, I think, a way to put it would be mindless, but also harmless.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I was more offended by The Touch and have been more offended by other Jingle Ma movies that attempted to be... whatever they attempted, really. I was never on board for anything Jingle Ma did.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think Jingle was trying to even just cover his own arse in case he gets panned in the home country, because, go on, the opening sequence was Michelle Yao saving pandas.
Oh, that was cute.
See? No one's going to look down on that scene.
Ah. I wonder... actually do not. I already know this answer. You're not at all curious to see this movie, Mike?
I've seen it.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, I possibly traded with Stu for the VCD. Because I had it on VCD, but I can't remember where it's gone now. I thought the film started off quite well. Because I wasn't expecting much from it, to be honest. I mean, I only paid like 50p for the VCD in the first place. It was just kind of like a impulse purchase. I like Michelle Yeoh, so I thought I'd give it a go. I thought it started off quite well. It set things up nicely. The first act was pretty good. I was, you know, a lot more into it than I thought I was going to be. Then it felt, it just kind of fizzled out. And also, I think Richie Wren, it's only written two ways. I actually thought he was pretty good in it. I think it's possibly why I enjoyed the first third, because he was in that quite a bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's designed to be this big comic book movie with, I guess, standard characters, but also exaggerated characters. And this, like, cool, very handsome cop with lovely hair, you know, it's not meant to be taken seriously. And I have no problem, you know, getting on board with that as such, because you can easily see a movie... what a movie intends to do, and I mean, I'm not sure comic book fans would appreciate it more. I'm pretty sure they won't. But you know, another thing I liked actually, what was probably the best thing I liked about the whole movie, was the design of Luke Gosse's villain. I mean, bionic arms. That's pretty. I like that actually. Just, you know, not expected, and properly in tune with the movie. And in terms of his fighting skills, I never really looked at it. I know he's looked good in Blade 2, but Do you have any opinion on if Luke Goss has something to offer, screen presence-wise and like fighting-wise?
Well, I've only seen him in I think Silverhawk and Blade 2. He was in, wasn't he?
Has he been in anything else?
Well, Hellboy 2, The Golden Army.
Really?
Okay. He's supposed to be pretty good in that, according to the review I read. Does quite a bit of his own action scenes in it, a bit of martial arts and stuff. I quite liked him in the villain roles. He's pretty good. I don't think there's not much I can say about him. I've seen him in two films as villains, and he's been fairly villainous. Mm. Kudos.
Yeah, it's a better career, more memorable career already compared to the one he had in the 80s.
Certainly compared to Matt.
Yeah, what's he doing?
Crying, probably. See, another thing I remember about Silverhawk, it's not much that stands out. Remembering it being kind of cheap looking, but kind of glossy cheap. A little bit like a turd with like sparkles on it or something.
Yeah, the movie certainly sparkled.
So it was kind of low budget, but kind of glossy low budget. It's hard to describe.
Yeah. But then again, if you turn that around slightly, if they were aiming for like a vehicle that could compete internationally, albeit only via basically the home video market, I think it doesn't really wouldn't work well in that regard. Maybe it's sold a fair few units. I have no idea about that, but I wouldn't really, you know, if that was their aim, then that aim ultimately was not achieved. I mean, it's you can have bad English language acting and still, you know, have a movie that could fly off shelves if it was cool in other areas. But
Naked Weapon.
Yeah, if you have some
standard
Naked Weapon.
Yeah. Wasn't cool in other areas, but it had quite a few hot women in it, so yeah. That's always going to help sales.
And the cover of that could help sales. I mean,
of course,
this Silverhawk cover. Well, Michelle Yao, of course, but you can't really make the Crouching Tiger connection and get away with it to the extent that it's a success on home video. It's kind of far-fetched thing, but Michelle is welcome to do more movies, produce more movies, but her track record isn't at all notable so far.
So, Mike, last movies watched?
Well, Stuart, I watched Hitman in the Hand of Buddha.
Ah.
Starring the legendary Huang Zhangli. Mm-hmm. Or as it came up on the Chinese credits, the English-Chinese credits on the film, Wong Jingli. Alright, so essentially it's a typical old school kung fu film, except instead of Huang Zhangli being the baddie, he's the goodie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, possibly down to the fact that he produced it and directed it.
Mm-hmm.
So he felt, this time I'm going to be the star and I won't have to evilly cackle or wear a white wig. And so, but the story's not much. He arrives in town, gets into a scrape with some beggar fella. He's looking for his sister and her brother-in-law. Her brother-in-law works at a rice cellar. They get into a scrape. He defends them, makes some enemies. A few people die. He has to get retrained, get revenge, beat people up. It's not going to win. Wouldn't win any prizes for originality, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was made in Korea as well, actually, a Korean shot. I mean, quite a lot of Kung Fu films were shot in Korea. If I remember rightly, I could be making this up. I think Secret Rivals might have been shot in Korea as well.
I believe so, yeah. Seasonal did, like, three, four, five movies in Korea. Yeah.
A lot of Elton Chong films, maybe.
Yeah, indeed.
Usually they sell for, I don't know why, but the Korean ones usually seem to sell for about 50p each on DVD or something.
Yeah, but I think it's due to the fact because like Elton Chong movies, they are probably the IFD acquired movies that they bought and dubbed in English, and nowadays those are obviously the versions available in English of these cheap Korean movies, but they're IFD sourced, so that probably explains it.
I mean, right, Hitman and Hand of Buddha, the one thing that pretty much the only thing that kind of differentiates it from being just a bog standard boot, yeah, that it's Wang Jiang Li as a goodie, which you know, makes a big change. So if you're a fan of his, then that's the main reason to check it out. It's quite weird having him as a goodie, actually.
Yeah,
I'm not sure it suits him as well.
No.
I mean, he's good. He's definitely got screen presence, and you know, your eyes are on him, and he's obviously great screen fighter. But I mean, half the time, it's like watching Lawleet in King Boxer or something. It's nice having him loads of screen time and having him as the goodie because, you know, he's charismatic and a, you know, good actor. Well, Lawleet is anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the part is just a bit bland. It's just nowhere near as interesting as being the villain. It's kind of like when the original Batman came out and most of the focus tended to be on Jack Nicholson as Joker.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Joker's just more fun. He gets the better lines and the evil stuff to do, which is just more interesting. And so when I think of Wang Jiang Li, I think of, you know, invincible armor.
Right.
Hiding his eggs. And, you know, kicking Jackie Chan in the teeth. Yeah. Knocking one of them out. That's the kind of Wang Jiang Li I remember. But he's definitely worth watching. And he starts off with a brilliant kind of display of boot work. The intro is brilliant, the intro fight. It's just how many different kinds of kicks can I do in about 3 minutes? And it's got kind of a good supporting cast. Tino Wong, I really like, who's in Secret Rivals 2 with Wang Jiang Li as well, and what else would Tino be in? Oh, Invincible Armor, of course, with Wang Jiang Li. I really like him. He plays kind of a smarmy, vicious kind of hired killer in this. He does a really good job with that. It's got Fan Mei Sheng as well, who you're probably thinking, even people who watch quite a few Kung Fu films will be thinking, who? I guarantee he's one of those guys that you'd see and go, ah, him! That one!
Hey, goggly guy.
Yeah, he's kind of, yeah, kind of rather portly, a kind of a polite way of putting it.
Mm-hmm.
Usually kind of beardy or mustachioed, and usually playing kind of a sleazy, goony henchman a lot of the time.
But he's the Beggar Soul character in this one, isn't he?
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah, pretty much. So, yeah, you definitely have seen him before. I think he does a really good job, like you said, of the kind of Beggar So kind of, not drunken, but kind of drunken master, with his little bit like Fagin from Oliver Twist, with his little small army of child thieves he has working for him. And another person as well is To Siu Ming, once again, I think, you've seen Kung Fu films, you might not know the name, but when you see him, you go, ah, him. He's got, well, distinctive for the fact that he's got basically cross-eyed.
Right. See, that's how I'm just collecting who it is.
Yeah. Usually ends up playing kind of people who work at the bars, who are all snotty to the hero, or, you know, at a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
Always have that kind of dub voice of, yeah, you! Yeah, so in this, To Siu Ming actually gets... I think it's quite an interesting role, probably the most interesting in the film. He plays, like, typically the kind of loser, gets a scheme, gets beaten up by the, kind of gets bullied by the bad guys. You know he's not going to play, like, the handsome lead or anything. But actually, he gets quite a few drama elements into it. He's always getting put upon and picked on, and he's a bit of a shit at the brothel and stuff, even though he's got a wife. And trying to scam customers in some slightly comedic tilted escapades in the beginning. But he actually gets quite a bit, you know, quite a bit of a juicy drama in it. So most of the key kind of dramatic parts involve him. And he even gets a fight scene as well.
Hmm.
So I think he's definitely got the most interesting part in the film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so basically, it's an old school kung fu film with Huang Zhang Li as a good guy kicking ass. If that sounds appealing to you, then it's a good watch. And I watched a fan-made uncut version of the film, which isn't available to buy anywhere, which takes a few different sources. I think there might be a German print and a Korean VHS and VCD and stuff, all not together. And it was surprising to see, actually, how much you expect some kind of some of the comedy elements or drama elements to be chopped out for an international release, but actually some of the fight, quite a few chunks of the fight scenes are cut, which is surprising.
Did they actually make a fan edit that was in widescreen, or?
Yeah, what? Sort of. It's kind of a kind of altered full screen source that's kind of forced into widescreen, into like an non-anamorphic widescreen.
Yeah.
It looks a bit squishy, but it keeps it kind of consistent with the, because the main source is widescreen.
Right.
So it's kind of forced into it to match it up, so it wasn't too jarring when the screen kept switching.
Because I have the Eastern Heroes DVD that had that Korean edit of the film. You're right, that had. I made notes that it included exclusive training scenes and extended fight scenes, but it was not like, you know, 40 minutes of missing gold or anything. It was a little bit here, a little bit there. So I think it's a good, better idea to combine a few sources to in that regard, because the Korean edit that I saw wasn't at all, you know, something I'd choose over the otherwise English dubbed full screen version that's on that DVD by Eastern Heroes. So.
Yeah. Well, this is all subtitled as well in English.
Right.
And obviously as much as possible, there's the Chinese dub on there as well. And obviously a couple of times it goes into Korean. But yeah, it's a decent film. I mean, it's not groundbreaking or anything like that, but some of the action's quite good. And as I mentioned, a few of the characters and stuff in it are pretty interesting.
What I remember is that as you said, it's a bit of a tough sell to buy Wang Zhang Li as a all-out goodie, because he kind of looks, you know, it's still Wang Zhang Li. He can't really escape that image, that bad guy image, and he doesn't really bring out, you know, the acting to convince you that he can smoothly slip into this good guy role. But the funny thing is, I saw on YouTube like behind the scenes footage from Game of Death 2, which he starred in as a baddie, and they were interviewing Roy Horan and Wang Zhang Li was standing in the background and demonstrating. And when they were joking together, and that's when you saw like the real Wang Zhang Li, you know, being light and relaxed, and that worked, you know, behind the scenes. You know, so, but I think he was kind of infected, if you will, by appearing as a baddie in films. Couldn't really switch easily. But that behind-the-scenes footage is quite great, because you see like the relaxed, light-hearted scene side of Wang Zhang Li, which was pretty good to see.
I mean, I can understand him wanting to, you know, have a crack at being the good guy and stuff. Yeah. Obviously, that's where you get more of the fame from and stuff. And but the reason why he was kind of used as a baddie so much is because he was really good at it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The man looked and acted like a bad mofo.
Very true.
I liked him at the end of Ninja and the Dragon's Den, because that was a light-hearted ending reel. Basically, they were humiliating him during that. It was kind of game for that, even though he, you know, the role was still very stoic and, you know, bad guy. So,
So, Stuart, what have you been watching?
Oh, well,
it better come off the ban list.
It does.
Dragon Tiger Gate again.
Well, come on. What else am I supposed to fill a day with? this time I watched Young and Dangerous 2. So yeah, I've got rewatching those films here, which is quite fun. Actually, the thing is, now at the point where I'm rewatching them, I'm picking up on more flaws and more things I would have, like, thought this would have made it a better movie if they changed this.
Oh no, is it getting worse every time you watch it?
No, I still find them thoroughly entertaining. And
how many times have you watched them?
Each probably about 5. But that's like since. That's been like over 4 years or something.
Pretty normal.
Mm-hmm. See, I hardly ever rewatch stuff. The only movies that I've really rewatched quite a few times was something like Ong Bak.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because, you know, the fight scenes are bitching, and it was more a case of friends come over, you've got to watch this.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing. A few of the Jackie Chan films I've seen a few times, but it's mostly English, you know, American, well, English language films,
mm-hmm.
where I kind of usually comedies, like The Big Lebowski or Swingers or Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, which I tend to watch repeatedly because they're just so funny and they're just so kind of, you know, well, it's made me laugh.
For a moment that was confusing Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas with the Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah, leaving Las Vegas.
Jesus Christ, that was not funny at all.
We can't stop here. This is backcountry. But I can't imagine watching a kind of a drama or something repeatedly, especially when you know what's coming, the twists and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'd get bored. Obviously you don't.
Well, I think it would have to be certain films. Because with me, at the stage when I first saw Young and Dangerous, that was the film I showed my friends. And they got really into it as well. They borrowed the film so they could watch them again. And then every time I got the next film, they wanted to learn of it as soon as I had finished with it. So, yeah, it kind of got... Well, I think with me sharing it out to everyone, they kind of got a positive response to that. But to the movie, the storyline of this one, it sort of picks... Well, as I've explained before, the first three Young and Dangerous movies is basically the trilogy, where it is a continuating story. And a major chunk of the second movie is basically filling in the gap from the first movie. At the halfway point in the first movie, Jordan Chan leaves to go to Taiwan. And by the end of the movie, he returns. So basically the second one, the first half of the movie, is explaining what the fuck he done in Taiwan. And around the preset of the second movie is basically all the shit that's happened in Taiwan's caught up with him in Hong Kong. But basically, Jordan Chan's character, Chicken, leaves Hong Kong, goes into hiding in Taiwan, where he joins, or meets up with his cousin, played by Blackie Koo. And then he gets sort of like enrolled in the, say, the Taiwanese triads. And he kind of gets mixed in with like the high heads of the society, and he ends up having an affair with the head triad's Japanese mistress, played by Ching Mai Yao. Wow, wow. I stammered there.
It sounds like I'm so impressed by her in this movie. She looks super hot. Wow, wow.
No, the thing is, she's actually tries... Well, when you first see her, she's in her kimono, and then she's always dressed quite sensibly, but on the back cover of the DVD, I'm looking at the new, she's in like a tight leopard skin dress. Like, that scene's not in the film. But
some
yeah.
Some leftover still from Raped by an Angel, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So obviously that sold some DVDs. But yeah, this basically just picks up more on in the later half of the movie between Ikon Cheng and Jordan Chan, and the uneasy bond between the Taiwanese triads and the Hong Hing society. So yeah, I can't really go into much more of that without spoiling some of the better parts of the movie, but this movie does introduce more characters, as one of the more prolific characters is Anthony Wong's Typhi, who went on to get his own spin-off movie.
I heard that was a complete turkey, that film. A spin-off movie, one of those cheap, made-in-one-week movies.
Yeah.
It might be good. Have you seen it?
I've not, but I think the entire thing is on YouTube.
Right.
So if I really do want to see it. But yes, this is one of the Young and Dangerous movies, which they do in, I think, the second movie and the fourth movie, and maybe, well, kind of the last one, where they focus more on Jordan Chan rather than Eakin Cheng, because with them being the dual leads, it occasionally swaps places. But yeah, like, reading the back of this DVD, like, they definitely like love Jordan Chan in this. Like, the time toppling, a scene stealing performance by the insanely talented Jordan Chan.
Stuart Salvador.
Well, I want to come up. I want to see if we come up with a quote that's on the front cover of this DVD that says, "A killer addition to the Hong Kong Gangster Hall of Fame." Like, who wrote this quote?
It's kind of interesting that Jordan Chan seems to get his own spin-off movie already.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he eventually did with Those Were the Days.
Yeah.
So it seemed like they had quite high confidence in that character being able to carry mm-hmm. the series and the spin-offs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jordan Chan can do that. I mean, I do think he's talented, so I'm not saying it's a gamble or anything, but already brave new ideas in a way.
Mm-hmm. And that was the thing of the, well, there's one thing I've never really researched into, and that was the reason why Jordan Chan was never in the fifth movie. So I was thinking if there was any bad blood, but like, heck, you appeared in one after it, so I think Those Were the Days was basically just the thing that was filling the gap.
No, it's not like he never worked. I mean, during mm-hmm. that time, I mean, then 96, 97, 98, pretty prolific stuff, so...
Mm-hmm. And they were fine by, not replacing, but introducing a new character, sort of, in his place, which was Big Head, played by Chin Carlock. So he was actually pretty good in the fifth one as well, so... There's not too many egos all shoved in one film.
By the way, only 12 movies in 1996 Jordan Chan appeared in.
Only,
so I mean, and many of them quite large vehicles as well. So, you never know. He might have been stuck doing God of Gambit 3 the early stage and doing his action and stuff like that. Maybe it was not easy mm-hmm. to get out of that movie.
Yeah,
and I'm saying that because he was pretty fucking good in God of Gambit 3.
So that wasn't the God of Gamblers 3 film that sucked balls. Because I do remember your opinion on one of the three.
It is actually very bad, but he's excellent in it.
Okay.
He's the standout in that film. Mm-hmm. We'll go on a tangent on that in another podcast, because that movie doesn't make at all sense in the whole timeline of God of Gamblers movies, but anyway.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, rating this one out of Young and Dangerous movies, this one always seems to end up like a bit lower, because heck, some of the other ones are really good, but I could never say this is a bad movie. Like, just if I had to put it in order with the others, it's just not gonna get as high as the rest, which is a little bit unfair. But yeah, this film does have one of the bigger scenes in the film that makes you watch the third one. It's not really a cliffhanger at the end, but it's sort of just around the middle. But you're like, what the fuck? Why? Yep, that was basically my reaction every time I watch it. For the sixth time, I still had the same reaction. I thought they would have changed it by now. I mean, come on. Didn't Andrew Lau get my letters?
you have to make a fan edition then, where you... Mm-hmm. Connect the movie so you don't have to have that reaction every time you get your heart racing.
The enthralling scene is suddenly replaced by like an Eakin Cheng music video. Then it just cuts back to the ending credits, like Of course then I'd have to re-edit the rest of the series, and I won't go into that. Right, so I think it's time for a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Right, so, second half of the show. Where are we? Yes. With the 37 new celestial movies promised to us for 2009, what are the movies you're most looking forward to seeing on DVD in this near future? Mike?
Should we just do a little backstory why all of a sudden we're getting DVDs? Why? We haven't gotten DVDs for quite a long time from Celestial or IBL, so...
Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, basically Cameron Ronson in Hong Kong have picked up... they've done a distribution deal for at least 37 movies. So, yeah, that's basically it. And they've announced about 5 or 6 for May, I believe.
I think so.
So, yeah, that's basically it. So, go ahead, Mike.
Is that all official?
At least the at least the like 5 or 6 titles they have announced are official.
Because I was reading,
Well, anything can happen in this business, I guess. But as of a few weeks ago, it seemed official.
Well, the information that I saw came from Shaw Brothers Reloaded, or through that and through the forum. Now, I hadn't really thought about it before. I was kind of taking it because I'd heard rumours that Cameron Ronson were going to release some Shaw Brothers films this year for quite a while before this announcement. But then somebody on one of the other forums reminded me and the other posters on there as we were getting excited about the Stars tour that was advertised on Shaw Brothers Reloaded website, which is a fan site. I think it's German-based. Mm-hmm. Which has supposedly some kind of links to Celestial. Which advertising, even have like a big kind of like funky-looking advert and stuff on their page for a tour that was going to go through London, Barcelona and Paris. I think maybe Berlin as well.
Yeah.
Of Shaw Brothers actors all on this tour with coming in and doing like some talks, you know, and there'd be signings and all this kind of stuff, and you know, Pu Feng, Wang Yu, Jimmy Wang Yu, tons of Shaw Brothers people. Got a lot of people all excited, including me. And then it turned out to be horseshit.
Really?
Just completely made up horseshit. Now,
well, there was this extract of a document posted from somewhere. So, I mean, it was not... I'm not saying that guarantees the deal, but it was not the... On the forum I saw it on, it wasn't, you know, just a title someone wrote. It was actually basically a copied document.
What, an Asian DVD guide?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I think that documenty type bit was taken from the Reloaded website or the forum there or something.
Right.
So, you know...
So if this happens...
I was being a sucker and kind of believing that, combined with a kind of somebody I kind of only know a little bit, but has been kind of bang on with information in the past from the Kung Fu Cinema Forum, who'd said that he'd been speaking to somebody at Celestial and they were remastering Brain Stealers at the moment, which is one of the titles that was listed.
Mm-hmm.
And coupled that with the information that Cameron Ronson were going to release it, I was kind of just believing it. But now doubt has been thrown into my mind after being skanked before with this tour that actually this might be just horse crap.
Mm-hmm.
Because I haven't heard an official announcement from Cameron Ronson yet.
I'm going to pull up if
somebody else I know
has had a date or not. Again, I'm not saying that guarantees anything, but
because somebody on one of the other forums did a bit of fishing and found out what titles have listed is coming out, all 37 of them, which
right.
are Battle for the Republic of China, The Black Enforcer, Black Magic Part 2. Black Magic Part 2 is definitely coming out because Image are releasing that in America.
That's right.
The Brain Stealers, Dark Semester, Deadly Angels, which has had a VHS release before, and that's much sought after. Enchanted Chamber, Forever Diamond, The Gambling Syndicate, Ghost Galore, Girl's Diary, Hong Kong Manila Singapore, Hong Kong Godfathers, which we know is available because BCI were going to release that. I will finally knock you down, Dad. Which is Shin Soo-ho and Chen Kwan-tai and stuff. Mm-hmm. Interlude on Rails, The Killer, which was on Warner Brothers VHS, as Sacred Knives of Vengeance. Killer is No Return, Killers on Wheels, Legend of Feng Shui, Love Lock, Mad Mad 83, Miniskirt Gang, which has been released in Denmark.
That's right.
Because it's got a Danish actress in. Mission Impossible, Mysterious Lady Killer, Nartar and the Seven Devils, Operation Lipstick, Painted Faces, which are two really rare titles that people have been wanting for ages. And Painted Faces. Is it Painted Faces?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's been remastered as well. I know that. The Psychopath, The Purple Shell, Red Beard, which is another really rare early martial arts one. Ripples, Sing High, Sing Low, Star Is the Night, Temperament of Life, which I... Temperament of Life... Is that Wang Yu or Ti Lung or something like that? Or it's actually quite Star Citizen, I think, that one.
Heard of
I could be wrong. Thief of Thieves, Three Stooges Go Undercover, and The Villains. Now, a lot of that is some really rare stuff and things that a lot of people have been waiting a long time for. I've been really praying that Celestia were going to release them. Or some company was going to release them anyway, and Celestia were definitely going to work on the remasters. Now, as somebody posted on here, and it said, I wouldn't have thought anything before until somebody had mentioned the Shaw Brothers tour that was bogus. Now that list of releases is too good to be true. Also, there hasn't been a lot of fanfare. There hasn't been a lot of official press releases and all that kind of stuff knocking around or on a lot of news sites. So I'm starting to get a bit worried.
And you have decided to coin too that, you know, it's a big gamble by any company, and Celestion and IVL know that now, to release these old movies onto the DVD market, because it's in Hong Kong and in Asia, basically no huge interest in these, you know, unless they're on VCD and or old Huang Mei operas, basically. And that is the truth. Even though it's a Western fan base for some of these, it's not enough. Not by a long shot.
So. Well, that's kind of why, if it did happen, IVL wouldn't be attached to it, because, as far as I know, they didn't sell brilliantly in the first mega batch that they released.
No, only a handful, and again, operas, one of the a few of those titles, big sellers.
I think Celestia have been making their money from selling the rights to different countries rather than any money they pick up from sales.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm worried that that's horse crap. If it's true, then all those, well, most of those titles are stuff that would easily be right at the top of my I really want to buy them list.
Yeah, did you ever mention To Kill a Mastermind within those 37 ones?
No.
Oh.
Well, I swapped emails a couple of times with people who worked at Celeste, and they told me that the print's just not usable. That they've got, they're too far damaged to be able to rescue the film.
Well, that can be horseshit as well, but. It can be down to laziness as well. I'm flipping the coin again, because that's what other companies have blamed. You know, they have blamed that, and in the end, it has turned out to be just sheer laziness.
Well, yeah, it could be that it is repairable, but it's just too much work, and they've decided it's not worth the effort for how much money they might get from that title. Because obviously, remastering stuff is very expensive and time-consuming.
You know, it is actually true that you can spot certain imperfections on Celestial movies that have been released that seem irreparable, but they can still remaster it enough. I remember Mad Monkey Kung Fu had not at all throughout the movie, but you can see like this blue tinge, and went back and forth in certain scenes. It seemed like that was something on the negative that they couldn't get rid of. Otherwise, that movie was, as always, you know, beautifully remastered. But even the pretty well preserved Shaw prints, which I think overall they are, they, you know, now and again they encounter some trouble.
Hmm.
But it's I'm looking at the picture I was referring to, the extract of the documentary. It doesn't say any date. It just say 37 Shaw Brothers DVD releases in 2009, batch 1, first and second month. And that was pretty, I think that was posted in April, and it doesn't say anything, but the first batch is Starius the Night, Painted Faces, Black Magic Part 2, Battle for the Republic of China, The Brain Stealers, Three Stooges Go Undercover, and Mad Mad 83. So we'll, I guess we'll see, but you know, if we, you know, if it is true, then as Mike said, this is great news, because there are some, you know, small titles in there, not just the, you know, fan favorites from Chang'e or Lao Galong. Those have pretty much been released, I guess. But you know, Stu and I are big fans of Painted Faces, obviously, the sample drama, and it would be pretty good to have that in widescreen finally. It's not been unwatchable in the full screen burned in subs version that's been around for ages, because Ocean Shores had the rights to it, but they only released a cropped version, but it's never been unwatchable, but you I think would be pretty nice to have.
Yeah,
so it's not one of those cases where it's a cam job, a fussy cam job that we've been subjected to for many years.
So to get back on question, those would definitely be at the top, and I'm just counting down the days until I can find a good quality Ong Bak 2 release with subs. It's the only film I'm really interested in getting.
It was kind of interesting to see, you know, a few months ago, all of a sudden IVL released Lost Souls on DVD. That the exploitation movie by T.F. Mao, and people were wondering, "Hey, is this a sign of things to come?" But the theories out there was that it was being released on DVD in America, and for some reason, Celestial felt the need to, I guess, have a local version as well. So we got that from IVL, and then it was quiet for a few months again. But Lost Souls is an example of one of those very small titles that people are very grateful to now have on DVD. It's you know, the smaller, the more odd Shaw Brothers releases that are being released, the better, I think. I mean, it's not the dramas I'm referring to. It's, you know, the horror stuff, the exploitation stuff. It's good to have that varied ensemble of releases on the market, and Black Magic Part 2 is supposed to be really good, even better than the first one, for instance. And Star is the Night, I just want to highlight. I do have that on Laserdisc. It's an Anhui movie. It's very watchable on Laserdisc. But again, if they release that and remaster it, then I'm very glad. But I know for a fact I won't make its money back.
Our second question for tonight, Ian Tendo asks us, I'm mostly into triad movies. I've seen a few kung fu films, but I've never really gone into them. I've been watching a lot of choreographed wushu stuff and wondered if you could advise me on some decent Chinese stuff that you would, that of those wushu-esque fight scenes in it.
And so, he didn't say films, he said bits.
I know, I just... kung fu bits. It startled me, and you just like to remind me of it, which has just made my silky smooth hosting wind in the pan. Yeah, Mike, let's hear your answer for this question.
Well, actually, I've got a very detailed answer, so screw both of you.
And I didn't, when this person asked me on Facebook, I didn't have a detailed answer, so I was referring to Mike Banner, and now we get a chance to see what that referral does.
Well, now, see, he uses the term wushu, which is basically just a generic term for kung fu. You know, obviously, including the animal styles, drunken boxing, anything can be termed as wushu, because as far as I'm aware, wushu translates literally as martial arts in Chinese. But what a lot of people who are kind of into the genre feel anyway, when they refer to wushu, is the mainland type of martial arts movies, which obviously wushu is also a competitive sport in mainland China, which involves a kind of bit of sparring-y type stuff, which kind of is a little bit like kickboxing, but also a lot of it is demonstrations. So it's a little bit like gymnastics or something at the Olympics, where you're graded on the, you know, the form and the style and the difficulty of the routine you're going to do and things like that. And possibly like the most famous kind of wushu person is Jet Li.
Exactly.
Who came to prominence when he was a kid doing wushu, especially weapons demonstrations and stuff. And so I think a lot of people associate kind of, when you say wushu to a kung fu film fan, it kind of means that flowery would be a word that I've used, would use again, and would have used before. Kind of quite acrobatic, lots of nice flourishes and flips and nice looking kicks and really kind of elaborate weapons work. But I think a lot of people would see it as the difference between that and something with kung fu from Hong Kong. Would be Hong Kong would be a bit more kind of, I was going to say punchy, kind of, you know, a bit more hardcore, a bit more forceful. It's a bit more powerful, a bit more rough and rugged. So it looks like kind of a bit more, a bit rougher scrapping, whereas wushu can look a bit light and almost dance-like. So in answer to that question, if taking wushu to what I mean, what I would take wushu's meaning for a film, then I'm going to recommend mainland Chinese films. Mm-hmm. So we might as well start with Shaolin Temple, which we spoke about before. Because as me and Ken said, there's some really nice kind of demonstrations with Jet Li doing different weapons and stuff in different costumes and Shaw Brothers-like studio settings. And just lots of really nicely choreographed weapons work and lots of cool kind of aerials and kicks and flips and things like that.
And it's a pretty bearable standard kung fu flick as well.
Yeah, it's a decent film. It's just, you know, it's worth watching anyway for Jet Li, for his kind of his first foray into being a film star. Some other films are Hatch and Fury.
Nice.
Which is a pretty cool title, I think. I quite like that title.
What does that even mean, by the Arhats?
Arhat, is that monk or some kind of type of monk or something?
Well, would make sense for that movie.
See, now, I watched that film. I think I've mentioned this on a really old podcast, one of our early ones. I watched this at Senai Festival, which is like a martial arts, more about the sport of martial arts, like kickboxing, UFC, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there was about 10 of us in an early morning showing of Arhats in Fury. Just like a DVD projector type screening. Nothing amazing. No. And there's a scene in it where one of the monks, in shame at what he's done or what's happened, commits suicide, right? And he commits suicide by just running and kind of throwing his head at a wall.
I forgot about that.
Which elicited just like a massive belly laugh from one of the female people watching it. It's kind of ruined the dramatic moment somewhat. Mm-hmm. But that's a pretty cool film. Typical kind of mainland film, lots of outdoors locations and you know, really nice scenery and stuff like that, and lots of big, epic kind of battles and multiple fights going on at once.
And a monkey.
And a monkey. Lots of lots of weapon work. Kind of typical mainland wushu. In inverted commas, kind of stuff.
Which is available on DVD by the aforementioned Cameron Ronson, but very good. It's a very good prints actually available for some various mainland Chinese movies. Very colorful prints, and there's been some good DVD releases with English dubs and Chinese tracks and English subtitles, among others, this movie, Arhats and Fury.
Yeah, it's is it Face, GD Face or some Guangdong Face? The
company. Yeah, there's been a mainland distributor as well doing these films. Cameron Ronson did them for Hong Kong. It's been repackaged in America by Tai Seng, basically the Hong Kong DVD. So,
I was going to say Vengeance, Rare Scope, and Dragon DVD in the UK have released all the films that I'm going to mention. Dark Action Fury was Dragon DVD, I think. Possibly under its 55th chamber imprint type thing. Mm-hmm. Another film I've mentioned quite a few times, South Shaolin Master.
Alright.
Have you seen that, Stu?
No, I just know that you've mentioned that a good couple of times.
You got to get on that. That is a cracking film.
Yeah, it's very good. I saw it fairly recently, actually.
I think possibly not going to get shot down by Ken by saying that it's not just, you know, good martial arts. It's actually an entertaining film in its own right, dramatically and everything.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty decent. Well done. And, not just one of those shot outdoors, stationary camera kind of things. It was fairly cinematic. Actually better than Shaolin Temple, for instance.
No, it's definitely, I think all round, it's definitely a better film than Shaolin Temple. And as I mentioned on the podcast before, Brandy Yuen of the Yuen clan was one of the action choreographers. Or guy in it. Possibly why it's one of the more kind of well-loved mainland films.
And again, available on Cameron Ronson DVD in the same stellar presentation for this kind of movie. Even English dub on the DVD in Hong Kong.
Yeah, well, I got the GD Face DVD, which has got Mandarin, Canto, and English dub on it. Widescreen and stuff, really nice quality. And that's out on Vengeance in the UK. Right, another one. It's Marshes of the Yangshan Po, or the US title when it was on Ocean Shores VHS in Warriors of Song Dynasty. And then, I believe, on Rare Scope in the UK, it was released as Warriors of the Water Margin, as it's based on the Water Margin, 108 Warriors or whatever. Well, the actual original story was called, but anyway, based on the Water Margin story. And that's a decent martial arts film. It's not too bad, but it's when it really kicks into kind of top gear in the last half an hour or so, where it ends up being kind of like a tournament fight scene. I love tournaments in martial arts films.
A staple of many Yima Wang Yu movies.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, the main focus of Enter the Dragon, you know, the main setting, and the classic blood sport. With Van Damme and Bolo. When it kicks into the tournament, you just get some crazy demonstrations of just brilliant weapons work, and it's just really, really good stuff. The rest of the film, it's okay, but it's worth watching just for that. I think that's on Rare Scope in the UK. A good quality print with Japanese, it's taken from a Japanese source, so it's got Japanese embedded subs on it. Definitely worth picking up.
But in English dub?
Yeah, English dub, yeah.
So Ian, if you ever listen to this, you're very welcome to ask for recommendations, but be sure to ask on Wushu and Martial Arts and stuff on Mike's Facebook. Fleecy stuff. My Facebook, and I guess for Triad Movies,
Second Chang
movies, and a scholar like Insight into the Young and Dangerous movies, then you can go to Stu's Facebook, which is, you know, I'm not putting you down, Stu. I'm not being funny. I mean, you're the main authority on Young and Dangerous and the spin-offs, and we all have our individual strengths.
Do you reckon you could be the UK's foremost expert on Young and Dangerous DVD series?
I've kind of thought that quite a lot, actually.
Seriously.
well,
I saw it first.
I think I'm
thinking I'm probably the only cunt that actually managed to squeeze a 3-page article out in a magazine about the movies, so...
Exactly. And is there going to be somebody in the country who's watched... How many films is there in the series? There's like about 7 or something in it, sort of sword connected. Who's going to have watched all of them repeatedly and watched all the, you know...
The majority of
the filmography of loads of the stars.
Yeah.
And wrote articles about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think maybe I should change the title from Stuart Sutherland, podcast host, to Stuart Sutherland, Young and Dangerous Historian.
Absolutely. You're onto something there, my friend. So whenever we do a commentary next time, especially when we do a Young and Dangerous commentary, you should fucking introduce yourself. That's that. That will instantly, you know, make people think it's, we're going to get a class now.
You can make yourself some kind of
acronym. And then 5 minutes later, you'll say cunt for the first time, and then people go, oh.
Mm-hmm. They listen to me talking, oh, wait, you're Scottish.
It's not good.
Hang on. Expert in Young and Dangerous series, he adds acronym for your name. Stuart Sutherland, he adds.
Yeah.
I like it.
Okay, right. Okay, next part of the show, band list. There's nothing really to say here because with my computer crashing last week, I've not really had the chance to update the band list on the website, but I'm pretty sure I've knocked off another 2 or 3 titles from the list, so... If you keep an eye on the website, podcastonfire.com, look for the big red banner that says band list, and I'll try and get that updated as soon as possible.
Whereabouts are you? Yeah, 40 left, 30 left?
I'm under 50 now, so.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, let's see. Plugin. Yeah. I've got to take control here. I'll grab you by the reins. It's this time of year again where the Edinburgh International Film Festival is running in Edinburgh between the 17th and 28th of June. They have, actually this year they've picked up their game when it comes to Asian cinema, because I remember speaking last year and it kind of being a bit of a lackluster. But this year, let's see, they have five films from across Asia. So... The Countdown, quoted as the Korean gangster film to end all others, they'll be showing Yang Ik-jun's Breathless. Also, other film shown, China's answer to the Rural Road movie, with Zhao Yi's Jalinur, should I say. Another Korean film, Members of the Funeral, directed by Park Sung-bin, quoted as a wayward South Korean gem. Then there is the Taiwanese movie from director Leon Tai, which is quite a mouthful here. Even the description, described as disenfranchised valor fighting the behemoth bureaucracy from. So, there's that. And then there's a title which is Non-Pudal Vivisor Sentai. Yep, there's not an English title for this film.
Sentai.
That would be space Tai, like T-I.
I thought you said Sentai. That'd be like people in robot outfits. That got me excited for a bit then. You're on about bureaucracy and stuff. It's like robots, Sentai. What? Lasers.
And obviously, the most anticipated film of the night festival would be Kelvin Tong's Rule Number One. That's gonna be playing, and it's starring Sean Yu and Ekin fucking Cheng.
The award-winning Rule Number One.
Mm-hmm.
Will he make an appearance at the event? You saw him like he did Maggie Chung.
You can squeeze in there. I'm an expert.
the only thing is, with it being in Edinburgh and. For some reason, all these festival films all have to start at least 8 o'clock at night. I think Rule Number One doesn't start till 10 o'clock at night, so I'm meaning like I'm going to be travelling home from Edinburgh at midnight. So, unfortunately, I won't be there to be doing guest signings.
do they mention anything about inviting directors in?
No, they've focused this year on, well, obviously other directors. I think the big ones this year is Darren Aronofsky, Sam Mendes. They do get some big names in, but when it comes to Asian cinema, I always feel it's a little bit neglected.
Shame, because Kelvin Tong obviously would be a good choice as he has no problem speaking English. Obviously.
Yeah, he speaks perfect English. So
he's from Singapore, so
would
be pretty cool.
So, yep, that's me. Oh, wait, actually, for tickets, information, and more, visit edfilmfest.org.uk. Ken?
Okay, just going to run through a few quick ones here. A DVD release. That's by the time this podcast comes out, I guess it will be out. The 20th of May, we see the release of Ticket by director Jacob Jung, director of A Battle of Wits. And also a lot more smaller films than A Battle of Wits, Cageman, Midnight Fly, a bunch of good flicks. And finally he made a small movie again. Ticket was screened last year at Hong Kong International Film Festival, played a few screens in cinemas, and then a DVD release never seemed to happen until now. So 20th of May, this small movie that Love HK Film described as pleasant but not crucial. It's an agreeable film about parenthood that would likely please audiences looking for a little possible reinforcement. And if the subject matter doesn't grab you, the scenery alone is probably worth the price of admission. I think this is shot in the mainland. Stars Nikki Wu, mainland actress, I can't pronounce her name, is Celia Yip. And apparently in supporting roles, Chin Soo Ho and Wu Ma.
Mm.
So that'll be coming out on the 20th of May by Some Dream Motion Pictures on DVD. Probably doesn't mean it's a bad DVD, just a new player on the market. And another plug for myself. On YouTube, aside from the audio video reviews, I have opened a little section I'd like to call, that I do call, Classic Hong Kong Cinema Moments According to the K. and I'm K, by the way.
Yes,
I'm the K. So on that section of my channel, I'll be adding little clips of what are classic, naughty, trashy, downright weird or unique moments from Hong Kong cinema that deserves more of a highlight than they usually get. So at the moment, I have up clips from Fight Back to School 3, The Cat, Run and Kill, and Killer's Nocturne. Two of these clips feature fights involving animals. So
it's not that dark.
No, it's not really not that dark. No, it's this first batch of clips pretty light, aside from the Run and Kill one, which I won't spoil here because it's a major spoiler for the film, but it's really fucked up. And also, if you haven't visited it, the most visited review this month on SoGoodReviews.com, The Fruit is Swelling, the adults only version of Big.
Oh fuck!
The Tom Hanks movie. So there you go. Directed by Cash Chin, director of Forbidden Legends, Sex and Chopsticks 1 and 2.
Good lord!
I've often thought when watching Big that the only thing missing was a lot of boning.
Well, you know what? This movie involves a girl, and she becomes 18-year-old, and she's 80 years old inside her body. But there's no sex scene involving her, you know, as the 8-year-old in the 18-year-old body, so they don't go down the basically child porn route.
Mm-hmm.
Or pedophilia or whatever. So movie plays is safe in that regard, but it does have Elvis Choi, which guarantees three fans knows this guarantees
some naughty hijinks,
whatever you can conjure up, it guarantees it. Elvis Choi, not one to hesitate.
Nor masturbate.
I guess.
There we go.
He's human after all.
Right. Okay, Mike. Plug?
Well, I'm going to plug the Terracotta Far East Film Festival, which I believe used to be the Tiger Beer Far East Film Festival.
All right, yeah.
But now it's linked to the organiser's DVD company. Terracotta Media released Hansel and Gretel this year. It's at the Prince Charles Cinema in London between the 21st and the 24th of May. Some of the highlights from it include the Detective with Aaron Kwok.
Mm-hmm. Pang Brothers film, yes.
Yeah, Oxide Pang directed. Ghost in the Shell 2.0.
All right.
Legendary Assassin with Wu Jing. Sparrow.
All right.
The Johnny Toe film.
Yep.
Obviously. High Kick Girl. Which is a Japanese movie with a kind of brand new actress who, I think he's a teenager, and she's a real-life karate champion.
Mm-hmm.
And you might have seen it depends on how much you trawl websites, the trailers and things like that. It's been on the Twitch site a few times. There was a cool kind of promo spot that appeared early on where it's the girl in a school uniform standing next to a guy in like full gi and everything with his black belt on in front of like a dojo or something, or a little temple, and he's giving her some instructions, obviously in Japanese, and then she just throws up a great big high kick and knocks him out in one go, and that's kind of the spot.
Mm-hmm.
So that film looks pretty cool. I'm up for that one. And then a Malaysian film, which I'm only mentioning, I don't know anything about it, but I'm going to mention it because the title is Zombies from Banana Village.
Oh shit.
And, you know, and I can't help but get excited by a film called called that. Things start going bump in the night in the quiet little banana village when one of the village elders collapses, and so does the village shaman. The two corpses go missing, and before too long the village is ravaged by an epidemic of brain eating zombies. Who will come to their rescue? What is the cause of the zombie infestation? And as the Terracotta site puts it, possibly the only lo-fi Malaysian zomcom you will ever get to see. Yeah. So, yep, those
kind of a classy lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And then that.
Well, there's 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, there's 13 films listed in overall.
Yeah.
Over the 3 days. And I've just picked out a few of the highlights, but there should be a few other gems in there. The others were kind of dramas, by the looks of it. Obviously, the ones with awesome titles or violence are the ones that first stand out.
Mm-hmm.
In my eyes, anyway. Also, just a little side mention. That's not worth mentioning them, because I've just been and gone. They did actually... This ain't so much a plug. It's more kind of like, you missed it. Just to make you feel bad, plug. Also at the Prince Charles, in the end of April, there was a showing of Tale of Two Sisters.
Mm-hmm.
And then a showing of Seven Samurai.
Oh.
With talks by experts. Jasper Sharp of Midnight Eye was there, and Dr. Colette Balmain, who's an East Asian horror expert.
All right. One second.
So, they're probably good, but you missed them, so...
Yeah.
Fuck you.
And on that note, I'm quickly going to wrap up the show because I'm dying for a pish. So, I've been your host for this evening. I'm Stuart Sutherland.
Yeah, my balls on.
Matt.
Right. Bye.
Yeah, I need a piss as well. Back in check.
Okay.
Fuck's sake. Hello? Is she all over? Hey, you son of bitches, talk. Hey, I heard you.
Fine, I'll just describe this wonderful pitch I've just had. Oh, that tin of lager went right through me. What have we been noticing here?